Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Alexandra. Alexandra is the CEO and co-founder of Angels Cube. So super excited to have him come in and sort of impart his wisdom as to what it takes to really scale up your business and move across borders. As you know, in these episodes, we dive into the guts of scaling up your business so you as executives and entrepreneurs can take the nuggets and use them for yourself and also for your business as you walk along that journey of building up both your knowledge and also your business. So Alexandra, super excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Same here. Very happy to be with you.
Cool. So let's jump right into it. And I guess the best place to start is one of understanding whether it's the right time to move across borders and move into the likes of the US. So if you are a tech business or an entrepreneur in Europe and you're thinking of moving into the US, what do you think are the key topics to consider before making that decision, before investing in that expansion?
Absolutely. Look, there are two questions that you mentioned. One is the right time, and what are the topics you need to address? So I would say there has never been a better time to think about going abroad, about international expansion, and especially US expansion. In short, the world is flattening, and after COVID, it has become even more digital. But if we put that into perspective to a fintech, for instance, which is what we should be interested about. CB Insight just released their Q3 2021 report, and I gathered some interesting data, which is what I also see from the bottom up, but I thought that was interesting to share. Put apart the fact that the market in Q3 has doubled since last year. I think what's interesting is what you see is that 63% of that increase comes from early stage deals. And out of those 63%, 65% are companies outside of the US. Mm. So what that means is that if you are an international company, especially a fintech one, this is the time when you want to be looking at going abroad, and people are doing it. Mm. I guess moving to your second part of the question, what is it that you should be looking at? We've came up with some sort of like a frame with different pillars that you need to look into before you need to think about going to the US. Or let's click some sort of a checkbox. For me, or the companies we look into and we invest in and try to help going abroad, most of them or all of them are based out of Europe, because that's also UK and Europe. That's also where we are based. Mm. More often than not, they are after Series A, and that was historically the case, even though that's changing. Mm. They tend to be past MVP. You need to be product ready, and your product needs to be global already to be able to address the markets you're going on, and especially in the US. You need to have some traction. I like to say this is a pull strategy, not a push. It's not something where you wake up in the morning and you say, okay, I'm ready to go to the US. This is something where you need to have some traction with US investors. You need to be, the core needs to come from the ground. And then the last thing is that it's very much a mindset, which is something we look into, but we can also help with, where the CEO and the founding team needs to be ready to open a new front and start investing time and resources, but also be aligned with the other constituencies, be the board or shareholders and the team. Once all that is ready, I guess you've checked a few boxes, so all the boxes or some of the boxes to be thinking about your US expansion.
So let's take it from the top then. I think you mentioned digitization, and right now is the time to sort of push in and start thinking about or moving towards that goal of potentially moving into the US. And it's an interesting one, right? Because I don't want to bring politics into the conversation, but I am. Forgive me, everyone, for this. We look at the world right now and maybe sort of the Trump's gone, which is in maybe some quarters good, maybe some quarters bad. But you know, you would think that expansion into the US would be maybe somewhat easier and the barriers may be pushed down because of that. Not as much quotas and free flow of trade. But then also you look at just our neck of the woods. You know, I'm out in London, you're out in France, and obviously we got this whole Brexit thing going on, right? Which is not great. Or again, some quarters great, some quarters not great. I guess my point here is there seems to be on the political stage anyway, a bit of introversion into the thinking of how economies expand. So that is an interesting take on it. And if we look at business owners or founders, entrepreneurs, it's a totally different landscape, right? Because as you say, you can quite rightly say, we are digital. And now we've sort of, that's been maybe 10x over the COVID sort of period. And now there's never a better time to use the internet, to use social platforms. There's an uprise of social platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, TikTok, et cetera, to really connect with a different audience and figure out whether what an audience or what a market's pain points are, and whether you can move into those markets at a said time. What are your thoughts on that?
So again, there are two questions that you tell me. You started on like politics. And then you ended up. So on the first one, you know, you're picking up on one of my favorite topics, and I'm going to be short because if not, we're going to digress too much. But yes, this is, you know, this is a, I mean, I'm not going to get into the state of the world. One thing that I will say for sure is that, and I don't know if everybody sees that in the same terms, but I think we are back to some sort of a Cold War, or, you know, innovation is the new arms race where, you know, between the US and China. And so Europe is stuck in between. And I guess this is a good thing and a bad thing. It's obviously a bad thing because, you know, we have like two superpowers fighting with each other. China and the US. I think Europe is trying to find, Europe and the UK are trying to find their own positioning. So, you know, the EU, you know, led by the Germans and the French are trying to be, you know, more compliant, more governance, more GDPR, more oriented towards climate and impact and sustainability, which is a different, you know, way to differentiate themselves from the two other superpowers. But within that frame, what that means is that there is a lot of support and a lot of money being poured by governments all over the world to support the growth of digital, of innovation, of technology. So it's not only, you know, it's not only summing up all the money that has been invested by venture capital or private equity, or it's really real money being put back by governments to support their clusters, to make the US a superpower to fight against China and Europe to find its place. So that's to answer your question. I think what that means is that that's at macro level. At micro level, what that means is that yes, and we can get into that. I mean, you know, we have, like I said, I have some sort of like a checkbox of 8 things that you should be looking into if you want to expand into the US. One of them, of course, is tax, and the other one is immigration. But I think under Trump, because you mentioned that, it might have been more difficult to establish yourself in the US. But I think that's not really the case. If you really want to go, all those countries are open for business. There are visas for tech people. It's not that difficult to find, you know, the right visas wherever you're trying to go. And so I think, you know, at macro level, it has never been easier to expand and move elsewhere and conquer new markets. And I think that's where the opportunity lies.
No, the opportunity, because there is the internet, right? The internet is fully cross-border. You don't need to physically go over and do a ground search of what's going on in the US. The US is a big state. You can start connecting with your target audience in the US, whether it's in New York or whether it's, you know, in different parts of the US. And then through that connection, you can work through a problem solution framework as to whether your solution fits this target market. And then also, obviously, if it doesn't, you can slightly nuance your product to fit a specific problem scenario in that market. Because it might be, for whatever reason, it might be slightly different or slightly nuanced from that from your product in Europe.
Yes. Well, yes and no. I think there are two ways to put it. I mean, the fact that you can be digital and start your business wherever you want and then sell it wherever you want, that's very true. And that's what's happening. You know, you can start, you can have like some very smart tech developers based anywhere. and some remote places, they can come up with like a killer product. And if they are getting traction, especially, you know, on the B2C level elsewhere, they're basically being pulled by the by their customers. And that's what I said. You need to have attraction initially.
Exactly.
I think that's very true for earlier stage companies.
Yeah.
You know, it's like MVP level, you have something, you're based in the UK, you try to sell in the UK, suddenly, you know, most of your customers are buying or from Australia or from the US, you speak the same language, and then suddenly you say, okay, why shouldn't we put more efforts into being, you know, there on the ground? You're basically being pulled by your clients. I think it's a little bit different in B2B and in fintech, where you need to approach the market. And I guess what I like to say is that there are two good times to be expanding, either very early, so, you know, as you said, your product is digital, you get traction, and so you decide from the get start that you're going to become a US play, and you forget about building your, you know, your local business, or you need to have like a strong ground wherever you are, so you, you know, you're solid there before you open a second front and reopen another market, which is probably one of the most competitive one in the United States. And so you do that later on at a later stage. And that in B2B means that, and I'd love to touch more about this, is that most people that have failed their US expansion think that it's just like reopening another country. That's very true in Europe. That's very true from, you know, UK companies going to the continent where you say we've been successful in the UK. Now we're going to replicate in France, Germany. Going to the US, and that's the same thing. It's the largest market, the historical market. So when you go there, even though your product is digital, to answer, finally answer your question, you need to have people that are local. I mean, it's very hard to do business with the Americans without being American. And I think that's where we've seen the most, you know, the highest hurdles. The Brits tend to think that it's easy because they speak the same language and they're cousin and it's easy to go. But once you're on the ground, there are lots of differences, you know, in the way you hire people, in the way hiring people, you know, what you do when you go to the US, the first thing you need to do is to hire some salespeople on the ground to get the business growing. Mm-hmm. And Americans are very good at, are very, very good at selling themselves. So if you're a European founder, you'll be very excited about all those amazing people that you have in front of you. And then you pick some people that are probably not the best ones. And I think all those cultural differences need to be addressed. And so, yeah, long story short, yes, you can get some product pool traction, but you need to at some point invest into the proper infrastructure to be honest, to restart a full-fledged business underground with all the bells and whistles. Company, tax, immigration, salespeople, PR. We discussed that offline. I mean, people don't realize how much PR is important in the US. We don't do that much PR on the continent. In London, you know, we like to do it a little bit. But funny enough, you know, spending, you know, a little bit of money when you land in the US to make yourself known, so your brand as some sort of recognition towards clients, employees, future hires, it's paramount. Mm-hmm. And that's probably one of the best investments you can do in the early days.
So let's talk about this. So you mentioned a number of things there. And I think the tagline here is making certain if you are entering into the US, you need to be pulled in. You need to make certain that you have product, there's awareness, and you're being pulled in by your clients. And there's an awareness side of that that you also alluded to, which is around PR. Obviously, there's marketing and obviously there's sales. So that business development function sounds like that business development function of PR, marketing, and sales really needs to be on the ground in the US, functioning from as soon as you make that decision, functioning and getting the communication outwards, i.e. from a PR perspective, getting the want to come into you from a marketing point of view. And then you have boots on the ground in your business development, your head of business development, et cetera, going out to clients, if you need to go out to clients face-to-face and really talking to clients and prospects, and then obviously moving them along the pipe. And it sounds like that function needs to be, you need to invest in that function early on in the process.
Very much so. Very much so. I mean, acquiring early customers in the US requires you to have a US touch and feel business development presence. So whether you do that by outsourcing that to a local BD resource, Outsourcing, as in you can hire an agency in the first place, or you can hire the first BD person when you open offices there, or you can even do that from wherever you are in Europe. But then, I would highly recommend to have some sort of an American in here speaking with the right accent, the right way of presenting things. And then the other thing is, as soon as you start getting traction, like I said, the US is just not another country. It's going to probably end up being your, the core of where your business is growing and scaling. So at some point, you need to be thinking of having some sort of like founder-led business development and sales. And so it's very hard to be, to be in the US. If the US makes sense for you as a business, it's going to grow and it's going to grow big. So you need to be sending founders underground that will basically sell in the right way the solution to the US clients, and will also transfer the DNA, the culture of a business. If you don't do that, it's going to be very difficult to be piloting the US operations from remote.
So why else should founders get out there? You mentioned culture, you mentioned obviously the story and making certain that they may be the face of the company. What are the other important elements as you as a founder, if you're going out there, what else do you need to consider as you sort of pack your bags and start that journey, start that US journey?
Like I said, I think you need the founder at least in the first 2 years.
Yeah.
To make sure that everything is in place. Because what I like to say, what I said also previously, is that opening the US is reopening the business. You're launching a second startup. So it's basically everything. You need to do everything. You need to have the local structure. You need to have the administration. You need to have the salespeople. You need to have the customer experience. Everything needs to be adapted to you, the US way of doing business. And there is no other way. So that's, to answer your question, is like everything that you've just done. So like I said, either in the early days, you have an MVP, you get lucky, you get some traction in the US, you don't even bother growing the local business, you basically run and become a US business from day one, almost, or you need to replicate everything that you've done.
And replicating everything, if you have to replicate everything you've done, you need to get out there and you be the face and lead that expansion. So you lead that team and grow it out. And then I guess at a point in time, if you want to move back or if you want to pass that on to someone else, you can. But I guess you need to hat the process. So just as a fireman hats and knows his job and his role, so too does when you're going out and you're expanding to new territories. In this instance, you need to hat that role. You need to understand it. You need to build it. And then if you want to pass it on to someone, you can do it at a point in time, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you can definitely pass it on to someone else and come back to wherever you are, the UK or Europe. But that's once the US operations are fully running and are already in scaling mode. And I guess to put, we jumped one key element, which is the first thing to look into. It's finding product market fit. And so, your product, again, let's assume that you're Series A, Series B business, you built operations locally, you find product market fit, you invested into scaling. Now, US, it's the next big market for you. You need to find, again, that product market fit. For your product, you need to find the fit with the right segment in the US. You'll probably have to adjust, fine-tune the product so the fit is perfect. And, it's also about having the right unit economics, having the right cost of acquisition, the right churn. So basically, that's why you want that is up and running and under control. And you have like acquisition and customer experience all put in place. Then as a founder, if you want to, for personal reasons, you can think about going back home because, that is on track, on rails, and can start continue growing as a proper company. But that fine-tuning in the beginning to find that product market fit, that needs to be done by someone that knows both the product, both the culture, and is able to convey the right message to the US potential clients. That's why, in terms of biz dev team, what you need some SDRs that are probably Americans that will be bringing the clients to you. And then the founder needs to act as the account executive for a while to be able to close that sale. And then again, you need to pass the baton to some sort of customer experience where, again, you have some sort of American touch and feel and flavor, if that makes sense.
No, definitely does make sense. And There obviously are nuances in moving into different markets. And what do you see as the platforms to be on, maybe from a B2B side, because we are talking B2B and also fintech. If you're a B2B startup or if you're a fintech startup, what platforms do you need to be on to get awareness into the market that you are coming, there's a solution, and get that engagement so that you have those, maybe even before you touch on it, as you touched on, you have those warm leads that are coming in. Do we need to think of things such as social platforms, such as LinkedIn, et cetera, to sort of run different types of PR campaigns or marketing campaigns? Or are we thinking about ClickFunnels and emails? Are there different types of mechanisms that you've seen used in order to really create that want as you enter into a market?
Understood. Look, I mean, LinkedIn and Twitter are historically Americans. So, you're going back home from that perspective. In terms of your whatever tools you use, if you've been using European tools or whatever tools, you don't have to change. I think that is very much the plumbing. You don't need to be using a US platform to get US clients. However, you very quickly need to offer on the front end, if I may say so, a full US experience. Mm. And I think it's interesting to see that, I'm thinking of a large French unicorn that moved to the US a couple of years back. And initially they were invoicing from France in euros. Mm. That, at some point didn't fly. You need to open a bank account. Mm. You need to have invoices in dollars. The front end needs to be completely American. So to your question on platform, you need to be using payment solutions that are Americans. But the good thing is that probably if you're using Stripe, you're already using the right thing. If you're using PayPal, you probably won't have to change your tools because the tools you're using are already American. But the fact that you need to be fully American from the front end, from the user experience, that's paramount. And as you said in the first place, what's interesting in today's world is that you can do that from where you are in the beginning to test and try and get your first 5 to 10 clients. But at some point, especially as thankfully the world reopens, you need to have a US BD people, AE people that will be interacting with your clients. And if you're into B2B fintech solutions, even the sales cycle, going through the funnel, top, bottom, and top, middle, and bottom, you need to be talking to different people within the company. So if you manage to get that sale approved and place your product into a US business, you will have to have all those American touch points.
Okay, brilliant. And we've spoken about the culture. We've spoken about the product market fit. We've spoken about some of the intricacies of all the things you have to look at in order to start thinking about and really maybe package yourself up for getting into the US market as a founder and also as a company. Out of all of this, I mean, you also mentioned failures and the reason to be aware of those failures as you move forward in expansion. But out of all of this, if you were to give our listeners three tips or three guidelines to use in order to move their operations into the US, what would those three guidelines be?
The first one would definitely be prepare. Prepare, prepare, prepare before you go. It's like almost miniature operations. Once you cannot just go there to see if it works and go back. So the approach of let's send someone, see if we can get a few sales and a POC doesn't work. In my view, if you want to be successful, it needs a full, at least a year of preparation and understanding, all of the other topics on which we haven't touched, but they're obvious. Again, tax, immigration, structure, offices, all those things that need to be sorted out in an American way. So that's the first thing. The second advice is all but linked to that, is if you don't prepare, maybe answering your question on failure, the reason why you fail is because, one way of doing business in the US, as you know, is that if you haven't organized things properly, you'll get sued within the first week. And that's the way to take you out of business. It's part of the, arcana of tools to do business and deal with competitors. And I think, a different mindset also on the legal side, is that on this side of the pond, both in the UK and in Europe, you know, we do the papers, we'll incorporate the company, we'll see afterwards, we'll deal with it. You know, the accountants will come and we'll talk to HMRC and we'll find a way. When we work in the US like this, everything needs to be really planned. And the third one, and it's interesting because we haven't touched on funding, and I'm happy to go into that as well if you want to, you need to have a proper budget. This is not something that you do with a little bit of side pocket money. And if you remember, I said, you know, one of the key things is to be in the right mindset, to be aligned with all your constituencies, and especially with your investors and your board. Mm-hmm. Because I like to say that because I see US expansion as relaunching the full-fledged business, you probably, in one of the most competitive, highly funded market in the world, you need a budget which is in line or similar to what would be the late seed or Series A funding. So you know, it's difficult to go without having at least 5 million. So don't get me wrong. Can you try and have a few things and make a few POCs? Yes. If you sense that you're getting US traction and the US makes sense for your business and your product, you can test without spending too much. But then if you think this is the way forward, you need to invest into that your preparation. And then once that is done, you need to put resources, second advice, and then you need to have a full budget to stomach the first 12 to 18 months to see, you know, to make it work. Because if not, it's really money thrown out of a window.
It sounds like in all of this, there needs to be a control element. You're controlling, if you have all of these in place, the preparation, you're also obviously not going to be, if you're prepared, you won't be failing. And also you have the funding. You're starting to get into a space where you can control your expansion and then be the cause of what's going to happen as you hit the ground, right? So control is interesting because it has to be the right time. So, you know, your stats on a weekly basis or a monthly basis or a yearly basis have to point towards expansion. And if you're not ready for that, then don't do it. But likewise, if you are ready for it, then you go for it and you control it such that you get something out of it and you make the most of that opportunity.
Yes. The thing is, I think if you're going to the US, it's not like opening another country, like I said. If you're going to the US, you're going to play big. Because you know, if you go there and you bump into a local US competitor, well-funded from Silicon Valley, with white shoe Silicon Valley VC funds, it's not going to cut it. You know, there is this sort of winner takes all, or at least, you know, you need to be competing for your space. If you have product market fit and people are interested in your product and your product is global, you should be fighting for your due size of market share. If you just go there to have a couple of clients, again, all the regulatory framework, all the costs associated to the expansion are probably not worth it. And it's perfectly fine to remain a UK business or, you know, in fintech, you know, if you serve a UK banking system or the city, I mean, there is enough to become a unicorn. You don't need to go and fight in New York and in the US. But if you sense that you can be global, then it's very hard to not to be there. Then at some point, you need to be thinking almost from day one as the US becoming 50% or more of your business.
Okay, brilliant. And I'd like to flip the scales now and just sort of move on to the next topic. And what I like to call this is the flash round. So the flash round, as everyone knows, is just a bit of fun at the end of our podcast, just to give a bit of a insight and some nuggets from our guests as to what they have done and what they have thought through their entrepreneurial journey. So I've got a couple of questions for you today, Alexandre. And the first one is, what is your most memorable moment as an entrepreneur?
Getting started, making the big jump when you say, okay, this is it.
Yeah.
And you burn your ships.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So making that jump. And we talked about failure. So I wrote down a note here. I'm going to ask you, what is your biggest fail as an entrepreneur?
I think, you know, I've had many, many, many. Well, which one was the biggest? One doesn't come to mind, but I think one of the main reason of me failing is not being focused enough. I don't eat my own cooking. I tell my investee companies and I coach my founders so they remain focused and then I'm all over the place. So every time I failed is because, you know, I wasn't watching the cooking. You need to be very focused.
Yeah, brilliant. And Last one, what would you say to those founders or executives out there that have got a good product or a service and are doing some great stuff, but for whatever reason feel a bit stuck in where they are right now and they can't reach the next level?
There are two ways to answer. One is, you know, you're talking about resilience. And so I think resilience is basically, you know, you'll find it within yourself. That would be my answer to them. And, you know, I like to have, you know, calls with my founders late at night on Saturdays when they're feeling very lonely. And I'm probably the only port of call. And we have like long conversations online. So, but what I tell them is like, you know, keep pushing. It will come, you know, there will be brighter and better days.
Brilliant.
It's part of the journey.
It is definitely part of the journey, you know, getting over those hills. But also it's nice to have a mentor and someone that you can talk to sort of share ideas with, right? And help you to maybe break free of where you are right now. Maybe even if it's that little 1% that helps you jump to the next step.
Absolutely.
And last one, and this time I am really going to flip the scales. Is there anything that you wanted to ask me today as we finish up the podcast?
Well, you know, first of all, I wanted to thank you because, you know, I hope everyone who's listening to us, you know, got all the way up to here and they had fun also before we had those 3-4 questions. I think you did an amazing job in running the podcast. And I'd like to ask you one question about how does it feel? I know you also have like some sort of a class or explanation on how to run a podcast. So yeah. I'd love to hear you on how do you came up with it? How do you run it? What are the key success factors of a good podcast?
Okay. Firstly, you have to have a purpose, right? That's really important. And my purpose is simple. I want to help executives and entrepreneurs build businesses that prosper and also build lives, and at the same time build a life that you can live and enjoy as you scale up your business. So you need to have a purpose, right? The next thing is sort of reaching out and finding out what makes people tick and what communication and what problems or what challenges your audience really want to listen to and will get the most benefit from. So I think between those two, the purpose and the knowledge and the communication, I think if you have those two nuggets, then you're on your way to really getting out there. And I think having a greater impact on society in general, because a lot of the time, you know, we have one-on-one conversations or one-on-three or one-on-four. But if you run a podcast, you have the opportunity to really multiply that and impact the lives of many. And as a podcaster, I think that's something that's actually great. And that's something that you should want to do if you're a podcaster.
If I may, one additional question or two additional questions, like what is it that you enjoy the most in, you know, in being a podcaster? And the other thing is like, how does it feel? Because, you know, 10 years back, no one would have thought about being like a radio anchor. And that's what we are. So you basically, you know, podcast with the opportunity to a lot of people to be on radio or on TV if you're doing a webinar. But, you know, I think podcasts are very close to radio. And how do you feel about that being part of your day job?
Yeah. So media, it's a big part of my job, right? How do I feel? I enjoy it because, you know why? It allows me to connect with really interesting and world-class operators such as yourself and others. And then also it allows us as a team, because right now you and I are a team, it allows us to collaborate on a subject and a topic that can then also, as I mentioned a second ago, can have an impact on many people. And that is just amazing. 10 years ago, did I think I was going to be a podcaster and a media personality? No, I didn't. But I realized that if you want to make a difference in people's lives, not just in scaling businesses, but in people's lives, you got to get out there and you got to use the sort of the new media platforms that are given to us today to do that.
Amazing. Well, thanks for the answer. Yeah, you are a sort of media star.
Brilliant. And as we wrap up the show, Alexandre, if people wanted to reach out to you, how can they do that?
They can do definitely that through LinkedIn, where I'm trying to be, that's where my media, where I spend my time, or some of my media time. So LinkedIn, I always answer. or by email or email. That works well.
What's your email address?
So email is acovello at angelscube.com.
And brilliant. Everyone, don't worry about writing that down. I'll put it in the show notes. And you can also obviously reach out to Alexandra on LinkedIn. We'll have that in the show notes as well. As we wrap up, it's been an interesting conversation today. Some really interesting insights that will all be in the show notes. So you can really dive into that and take away the nuggets. Also, you know, it's good to, you know, learn from others and make certain that you continuously upgrade your knowledge and move forward towards your ideal scene. So please go ahead and subscribe to my podcast channel at www.scaleupconsulting.co/media. There's a treasure trove of knowledge there from global leaders and operators in the fintech, tech, and services space that will allow you to sort of move the needle on scaling, on founders' journeys, on life in general. So sign up and we'd be interested to bring you along the journey, and looking forward to the next episode and challenge you soon. Cheers, everyone.